Agartha by Bud Smith, narrated by Brian Allen Ellis. They wanted to repossess my dog. I defaulted on my student loans, and the creditors sent a letter that they were coming to take her. That was finally the thing that set me away from your society. Very carefully, I did not answer the phone. When someone came to the door, I held my breath. My dog did a woof. I put my hand on the nape of her neck, where the collar would be if I was cruel. I said, "Shh." Her coat was slick and shiny because I'd been feeding her avocados and eggs to ready her for our journey, our escape. Her fur felt good on my palm. There was no fear. The shadow outside on the porch leaned on the glass with cupped hands, trying to peek into my house, but the power had been off ever since I'd lit the bomb off in my basement and blew a hole in the floor, wide and deep. "Everything all right in there?" My dog growled. The person left. They'd already towed my car out of the driveway, but it was all right. I'd been preparing and wouldn't need a car where I was going. "Did anyone ever tell you the earth is hollow? That's where Agartha is. You can go and live inside this hollow earth beneath your feet if you'd like. There are many secret passageways, many ways in, most of them narrow. Just a couple bitcoins buys you a vague map. You'll love it down there. The cost of living is lower. You don't need a car, or car insurance, or gasoline, or oil changes. It's amazing what you can learn on the internet." Someone knocked on the back door. I peeked around the corner. Through the window and the door, I could see another shadowed outline in the daylit world. I whispered to my dog. It was a mistake to buy all this knowledge, then try to sell the knowledge back to someone else. That's the way a curse is sometimes passed on. Save yourself from the curse by cursing someone else. And by light of cell phone flashlight, we opened the cellar door and began our adventure downward. My suitcase with fantastic rolling caster wheels was at the mouth of the crater, stuffed with survival gear and food. Beef jerky, black beans, dehydrated milk and instant coffee, fig bars and sunflower seeds, 9 gallons of water. The bomb hadn't opened the passageway to Agartha. I'd had to jackhammer through another 7 feet of rock, but finally I broke through and exposed the entrance to one of the tunnels. Now I threw my suitcase into that passageway, then jumped down into the tunnel myself. With a whistle, my dog took the leap of faith too. I caught her like a touchdown. She'd follow me anywhere. I pushed the button and our lantern lit up. We began to walk through the crude tunnel. Roots and dripping water from above, mineral stick, pebbles falling here and there, the distant rumblings of vehicles. With 1% battery life on the phone left, and a signal so weak, I stopped and sent my brother this brief email. "Hey, set up a bomb in the house, and I climbed into the crater. Won't be at your place for Thanksgiving. Tell Michelle I am sorry. If you want, there's a jackhammer that fell into the hole 7 feet. If you get it out and bring it back to Hardware Heaven, you can get my deposit back. It's $100. Love you. Don't follow. Your bro." I stuffed my phone in my pocket, but like an angry animal, it buzzed in protest. A text. "Date. Hi, I'm at the restaurant. Are you here?" "Me. I'm sorry. Forgot about our date. Actually, I'm descending through the crust of the earth as we speak." "Date. What does that mean?" "Me. Moving. Changing careers. Don't want to be an adjunct professor anymore. Don't want to teach creative writing. Have decided to venture underground. Legit." "Date. Seriously?" "Me. So I won't be dating for a while, probs, but it's no reflection on you." "Date. Fuck you." I wanted to comfort my date, so they'd understand I wasn't just rejecting them. I was rejecting them and everything else, but it was useless. The first day we walked without rest, gradually going deeper. The walls were muddy, and in some spots rubbing against my shoulders. At one point I felt claustrophobic and turned sideways. I took my dead cell phone out of my pocket and shoved the cell phone into the mud. It disappeared with a sucking sound and I smiled, feeling relieved. Later that day, I tossed my wallet and my car keys and my house keys into a bubbling pool of water that smelled like rotten eggs and sorrow. That too made me feel better, lighter and heroic. The night was chilly and of course dark outside of the lantern light. I wrapped a wool blanket around myself and sat with my dog beneath stalagmite dotted orange and yellow with fungus. Time existed only on a wristwatch, but each second that clicked off felt like a joyful goodbye to human history. That night I had a dream that my house was loaded into a flatbed truck and the house was driven back to the bank. And the bank ate my house. All the bankers came out of the bank and ripped off a piece of my house. And in the blinding sunshine, the bankers laughed and ate and grew fat while they consumed everything I owned. And in the dream I felt better and better. They ate through the walls of the house and into the house and ate every book I'd ever read. Each book they ate cleared my mind in the dream. And then they ate my clothes and my photo albums and even my mother and father's ashes on the mantle. And that made me feel good, too. The bankers ate into my bedroom and consumed the pile of bills on my nightstand. They ate my checkbook and the notebook where I kept all my secret passwords. They ate the calendars from the wall. They completely freed me of everything. I woke up so happy. I woke my dog, and in the lantern light, I fed her crackers and canned chicken and the last of the baby carrots. We walked on, the path a winding downward slope. Occasionally, I found a couple steps that were carved with obvious chisel marks, man-made. At one point that day, I found a graffiti on the wall in pink spray paint. How could they see anything but shadows? Farther up, there were initials and dates. So-and-so was here. Besides occasional litter, this was the only sign of American life I saw, unless some of the swastikas I found were painted by Americans, which they are known to do from time to time. Later that day, my dog and I came across great underground pools of water, steaming and seeming fresh, but I didn't let my dog go in the water, and I didn't go in either. I'd just seen a news report about a person who had climbed inside a hot spring at Yellowstone National Park, and they had melted from the water, dying almost instantly, disintegrating. Instead of going in the water, I poured some bottled water and let my dog drink from my hand. I said, "Sometimes I think knowledge is just a weight that crushes a person. The more you know, the more the weight crushes down on you. It might save your life, but it also makes you miserable." My dog looked up at me and I wondered how joyous it must be to only have to know a couple words. I said, "Did you know that ants can carry 10 times their own weight? Did you know that ants have the IQ of an ant? Not very smart. Ants do fine. They can carry a lot of weight. Ants are very happy, and they have all the things an ant needs to live a full insect life. I can't afford new sneakers. I just glued my sole back on. Now I'm ready to walk for a while." After my big speech to my silent dog, I too was silent for days, as if I'd taken a vow, and the vow was powering the journey itself. The path opened into a great hall of stone, a natural amphitheater, empty except for the echo of my footsteps and the panting of my dog. Some people will tell you there is no chance whatsoever that the earth is hollow. I'm well acquainted with those kinds of people. I used to see them all the time on message boards. I used to argue with them all the time. But each time I tried to fight their ignorance, all I figured out from doing my own research was that there are so many things beyond the narrow scope of the human mind. I'd click a link and find some other truth. Satellite photos of massive holes seen in the North Pole, shot from space. A respected Air Force pilot who had flown his plane into one of these openings at the pole and had seen firsthand vast ranges of underground mountains, rivers, a purple sea itself, subterranean cities glimmering. I first learned about Agartha from a YouTube clip, an astronaut in zero gravity playing around with a bubble of water. The astronaut had some contraption that mimicked the exact rotation of the Earth around the Sun, and the bubble of water hung suspended in the orbit. The astronaut then pointed out that air bubbles inside the floating water droplet were forming and being pushed to its center, creating a natural hollow. Next part of the video, the astronaut narrated a cartoon clip of how Earth was formed with molten lava, and as it spun in space, cartoon, lava Earth cooled and the air bubbles formed in the middle of cartoon lava Earth, too. The place was called Agartha. The third day, it began to warm up because there is a blue sun in the center of the Earth, and I was walking towards it with my dog. Earth doesn't have a molten core, it has a blue sun. Isn't science so cool? The lantern was beginning to dim. Its battery fading. We wouldn't have much more light. We'll be stumbling around in the dark like ignoramuses soon. Get ready for the new way of life. Lucky for us, I packed other batteries. But then there was the sound of birds, and I was stunned to see them flutter past us. Enoch leaped up and snapped her jaw, but the birds were small and fast. I knew for sure that we were headed the right direction. The birds were trying to get back up to your sky. After that, Enoch didn't even have to pick which way we went at the splits. I knew just to be walking towards the birds, going the opposite way, going against common animalistic sense to see the topside skies, to feel the sweet wind, to let the rain wash the dust from their wings. That night, just before we were ready to stop traveling, we came to a branch in the tunnel with a sign that read, "City Right, Canyon Left." I climbed a set of stone steps towards the canyon. Enoch didn't want to go that way, so I let her stay in the tunnel, tail down and growling. At the top of the steps, there was a small hatch, bolted closed, but not locked. I lifted the hatch, and blue light filled the tunnel. I opened the hatch the rest of the way and climbed up. Enoch barked. "It's okay," I said, but I wasn't sure myself. Up there, the blue sun hung dead center between two sheer-faced stone walls, yellow and white, that looked unscalable. This sun did not rise. The sun did not set. It was forever hovering in place. The canyon walls had ivory growing in spots high up. I walked down the path. All I saw was stone and ivy, but the farther away from the hatch I got, the more I lost my wits. Then I saw something coming my way on the path ahead, and I froze. Something the size of a boot, bouncing in quick leaps. The creature was covered in fur that was dragging on the ground, protruding tusks, antlers. It realized I was there, and it lifted its head to look me in the eye. That's when I lost my shit and turned back and sprinted towards the hatch. Once I was in the tunnel again with Enoch, I felt better. I sat on the steps and calmed myself. Enoch was down on the floor drinking some drippings that had fallen from the ceiling of the tunnel. I lifted the hatch again and peeked out. There were more of these creatures up there. I counted three now. They were sniffing the ground and hopping along. I lowered the hatch and bolted it closed again. I said to Enoch, "Okay, girl, you were right about the canyon. It's not safe there. The canyon is filled with rabbits from outer space. Inner space. Let's go." 2 more days we walked like that, ignoring branches in the tunnel that went anywhere but towards the city. I was startled when we suddenly came to the end of the tunnel and there was a woman sitting at a desk reading a magazine by candlelight. Beyond her was a wooden door. "You're not a lizard person," I smiled. "Thanks for noticing," she said. She had a strong German accent. "I'm looking for a new world to live in. Is it through that door?" She looked at the door and considered it. "I like it, I guess. You have to work, though. Will you work?" "If I have to, I will." "You do, yeah. Way it goes. What kind of skills do you have?" "I was a teacher," I said. "A college professor." "Oh, that's no good." She frowned. "Okay, can I see some proof?" I reached in my back pocket and pulled out my ID card to get into the university. I also had my diploma. I handed the two things over. She looked at Enoch. I said, "She doesn't bite." "She's got teeth. She bites. Any fool know that." The woman scowled and handed back the diploma. "We don't value knowing things. What do you make a year up there?" "Negative $15,000. "Happily, there are no teaching jobs here. Most topside college professors have become trench diggers and now perform heavy manual labor. Can you peel potatoes? Have you done any janitorial work? What about burying the dead?" I carefully folded my diploma back up and slid it back into my pocket. "Bury the dead? I have a college degree," I said. "So you think its work is beneath you?" I laughed. "Physically speaking," she said, "you're at the bottom of the world. If you want to go in, you'll have to swing a pickaxe. You'll have to gather mushrooms. You'll have to shear woolly beasts and work the chutes that drain the oceans for our crops. You will do this work?" "I'll be valued?" "You'll be valued, yes." I stared at the closed door just beyond her desk. "Through that door?" I said. "Is that hell?" "Nah, it's a nice place. Not much crime. Just no normal sunshine. Where you come from, was that hell?" I shook my head. "I'm up the netherworld," I said. "Good, but first I'll see that you eat that college degree of yours." I said, "Done." I was hungry anyway, so I took my diploma out of my back pocket and stuffed it in my mouth, chewed and chewed. Next up, the woman had me fill out paperwork. I filled it all out in a gleeful scribble. Out came the rubber stamp, slammed down on my application. "Welcome to your new life." As the door opened, a wave of new birds that had been waiting for their chance flew past in a desperate swoosh, and my dog turned her head, tongue hanging out, happily oblivious, watching them fly back into total darkness.